Hey, everybody. Steve Savitsky back on Savitsky Talks. And today we have Adam Englander. And Adam is the head of school in Boca Raton, in a very, very interesting school, the Cats Hillel Day School of Boca Raton. And they've really made some interesting news. So first of all, let me welcome to the program. Adam, how are you?
Thank God. Great. Thank you so much for having me.
It's our pleasure to have you. And you know, you've actually made some big news because you've done something that is very important to the Jewish people, which is basically you have announced that in your school you are going to be keeping tuition, first of all, for several years. You've kept it flat, and now you've actually announced a reduction in tuition of $1,000 per student for the coming year. And that makes big news. So, first of all, congratulations. I really applaud you.
Thank you. Yeah, we were very excited about it.
And second of all, let's talk a little bit about it. And first of all, describe a little bit about the school. You know, what's the school like? How many kids, grades, staff, et cetera?
Okay, sure. So the Cats Hillel Day School of Boca Raton is officially labeled as a modern Orthodox Jewish day school, and I guess that's probably the best way to describe us, even though in general I don't love using all the labels. We have a little over 500 children, and we range from two-year-old nursery up through eighth grade. Our families primarily live in the Boca Raton and Boca Raton surrounding areas, and but they do come from further north, like Boynton Beach, and further south. We also have many families that come from the Hollywood area and around that general area. Most of our students graduate and go on to a few different yeshiva high schools.
Okay, that's great. That's really, really, really nice. So it's a nice-sized school. So let's find out. So how did you do it? I mean, like, what's the magic formula?
I wish I knew what the magic formula exactly is. I could tell you what we did, and I hope some of the basic concepts could be, you know, replicable other places. But basically, about 5 years ago, after already several years of trying to be very careful with our expenses and really, more importantly, just put a premium on outstanding education and educational quality, we've really seen our numbers rise. And we were, you know, going from, let's say, numbers in the low 400s that kept creeping up to 440, 450, 460, getting close to 500. And as that was happening, we were, thank God, very careful about our expenses, and the school ended up seeing a surplus. And it was the first time in many, many years, if maybe, I think, ever, that school had that kind of situation as a result of enrollment. So what we decided to do was bank that money, put it into a reserve. And we actually at that time didn't have a clear plan other than to keep tuition stable. And we kept padding that reserve and being careful with it because, you know, any school really should have some money, even, let's say, just for a rainy day. You never know what kind of surprise expenses you're going to have. And that happened 1 year and then another year and another year, this really strong enrollment. And primarily as a result of people moving to the area and people hearing that our education was top-notch. And we had people coming from, you know, throughout South Florida as well. And we continue to ensure that our teachers got a raise. We would actually budget money in the current year for the next year's teachers' raise and still allow for tuition to remain flat as long as our numbers came in where they needed to come in. And that just kept happening. So that allowed us to keep things stable for a while. And then finally, in the very end, we were honoring our biggest donor, really our primary donor, for who our school is named, the Katz family, this past year. And we only had $1.5 million left on our mortgage, and we decided to come up with a plan to pay down that mortgage. Parents contributed to it. It was worth their while because we announced as part of the plan is that tuition would go down by $1,000 per child from grades K through 8. So, obviously, there's many more details to talk about, but that's the basic picture. We just made it a priority to say we got to keep things flat, and then eventually we didn't even realize we would get there, but then we said, you know, we were able to reduce it by $1,000. Let's do it.
Well, that's terrific. Now, let me ask you a question about class size, because what I've seen is that in a lot of schools, as the enrollment increases, they automatically start have to hire new teachers because they want to keep the class size at a certain level. So what did you do?
So we were able to keep that level. We really didn't increase class size that much. We increased certain services, various student services. There's, you know, another school psychologist, but we have kept our class sizes in the, you know, I would say more in like in the low 20s range per class. Like typically, but we have at least, you know, two classes per grade. So maybe that was one of the main ways we were able to do that, was by filling some of the open seats that previously existed and basically filled those up. The only exception I would say is the middle school, where we've really grown quite a bit and have closer to even 60, let's say 55 to 60 students per grade. And we, of course, did have to hire more staff, but again, did it cautiously and made sure to, you know, priority is on obviously having educational quality and great people, but also keeping an eye on costs. So, you know, we are, I guess, lucky in a way that we really have, at this point, a fairly efficient operation. Most of the classes are relatively full, if not at capacity, and that really helps.
Right. Now, what about resource programs? I mean, some of the administrators I speak to tell me that the costs they have of running these resource programs are so high that they can't get tuition down.
Yes, that's an issue. We have that as well. We do have a resource program for certain students. The tuition on that program is about double or a little less than double what our regular tuition is. But as you can imagine, the great majority of people cannot afford that, and so we do give scholarships. But we're careful on that, too. We actually have those certain tuition minimums. You know, one of the ways that we were able also, I should really, this is important to mention, is not simply that,
sure.
You know, it wasn't like, oh, we just got lucky and enrollment came in. Part of being cautious on was not just on expenses, but on collections, making sure we really collect the tuition that we're supposed to get, being tough, you know, I hate to say it that way, but really making sure that people are paying to the maximum that they should be paying based upon their, you know, lifestyle and income. And also, we do have certain minimums. Like, although we want to help every single child to do the best that we can, we recognize that there's a certain line somewhere. I don't know if anyone knows where it is, but if you give too much for too little money, it's going to bankrupt your school eventually, or it's just going to put such an incredible burden on others that the system, you know, God forbid, could collapse. So we are careful about ensuring that certain amounts of money do come in, and we're also able, you know, through certain grants and other things and tax credit scholarships, you know, there's been many avenues where we've able to capitalize upon. But in a way, it's actually been helpful, because part of having the program for students who have some special learning challenges also brought in some new families, some of significant means, who've been able to help the school even beyond their tuition. So that was also really helpful for us.
That's interesting. So, you know, this is obviously an issue that is all over the country, something that's talked about all the time. But what about, like, the board and the lay leaders? Was this a significant priority to them, saying, we have to do something to lower the cost? So did it kind of just fall in by accident in a way?
No, I think this was, I would say, in the very beginnings, I would say maybe in the accident category, like we suddenly were like, wow, we're suddenly in actually a good, stable financial situation. And, you know, I think so few schools ever experience such a feeling. And but then the board did absolutely make it a priority. I have to be honest, it never would have happened had it not been for people on the board saying, hey, there's too much of a discrepancy here. We have families paying, you know, inordinate sums of money, and we need to send tuition down. And over time, you know, the plan developed and was tweaked, and we actually sat, the board was all part of the process as we came up with and devised a program for how to pay down the mortgage. And that was kind of the clincher, but I would say it had unanimous support. They saw this as something we need to do.
Well, you know, I think that's important, because, you know, sometimes I see in some of the schools it's just not a priority, and I think it is a priority, because I think people are hurting. So I'm glad to hear that what you said. But to me, in a way, it's kind of interesting, because what you're saying is that if you have excess capacity, So if you have a new classroom, even, and you could put 20 kids in that classroom, and the average student is paying $10,000, just using this as a number, you've now got $200,000 of income. Your cost against that is the teacher, basically. That's what it is, which we know that even though they should get as much as possible, they're certainly not getting that kind of money. So the net effect is that class becomes a profit center in a way.
Yeah, you actually could look at it that way, and I actually think it's healthy to do so. I know there's something that, you know, bothers people to talk about it that way, but yeah, you can't just do it for the absolute minimum. A school, just like any family, we all know, well, not everyone can do it, but every family should have a reserve and needs to have extra funds and needs to be looking out for its long-term financial future. A school needs to do the same, and you can't do it unless you're taking in the monies that will allow you to do so and to allocate those funds appropriately. Ultimately, of course, the goal is to just make sure the maximum number of children get the best possible Jewish education, but I think that's part of it.
Yeah, and I mean, I know you talked to me a little bit about some of the grants and educational tax credits. And, you know, we at the Orthodox Union have devoted a tremendous amount of money, tremendous amount of time, effort, money to help schools. And every state's a little different, but educational tax credits certainly is something that we've worked on and in Florida. So maybe you could just explain how that works for some of the people who are out there.
Sure. Great point. Because you know what? The educational quality is huge. Being cost-effective is huge. Filling up classes is huge. But we have been the beneficiaries of something else that's really been incredible. And actually, a lot of the credit does go to the OU. We benefit from here in the state of Florida of a tax credit scholarship program, where basically there are monies that are allocated by certain businesses. Their tax dollars can go into this particular fund. And children who are deemed to be low income, and there's a whole procedure, families apply. And those students are able to get this tax credit scholarship program applied to their tuition at the school. It's basically part of the larger school choice movement. And the Jewish community here is really a small part of it, but nonetheless a significant part. And so we're getting close to $6,000 per child per year that qualifies on this program. And, of course, it doesn't just simply go to the school. The families, you know, have to sign off on it. But our school now is getting it for, I'm just looking at my numbers here, 52 children, which is coming out to about $275,000 is coming in to our school as a result of that. Now, that money is going towards those children, basically. But, however, even though that's happening, of course it helps everybody, because it means that that is a burden that no longer has to be borne by, let's say, the families who are paying full tuition. Now, that doesn't satisfy the full requirement of these families. Like, even if a family qualifies for this program, which is called here Step Up for Students, they still have to pay additional monies towards tuition, but it's still at a significantly reduced rate. They're still getting a significant scholarship from the school. But in the end of the day, the school, these children, and really everybody is making out far better. And the OU has been a big part of that. We have a representative down here from the OU who helps us with this advocacy. I've been personally a part of a mission a couple of years ago. We all flew, a whole bunch of Jewish community leaders flew to Tallahassee, our state capital, and we met with a lot of the key people, and we really put a lot behind it, because it's been a real game changer, not just for our school, but throughout all the Jewish schools here in South Florida. I don't know the exact number, but I think it could be already close to $10 million is coming in just for these a year to these South Florida, various South, to the South Florida Jewish community. So it's really been huge, and we're hoping it continues. But, you know, you never know if it could, you know, there it's all about how the votes go.
Right. Well, no, we're really proud of what we've done at the Orthodox Union, and we're glad that, you know, that your school and others are reaping the benefit of that now. So I want to talk about one or two other issues. When you know all about schools, so where would you say, is there any area where you see the biggest waste going on in schools, or maybe it's just, just because the cost ratio and so on just doesn't work, and because of that, schools are in trouble, but are there any areas that you think can be improved upon?
I think there are some. I actually do. I mean, obviously, every school is unique, and I really should, you know, kind of say that as a disclaimer. You know, we've been very blessed, and I think we've made a lot of great moves. But, of course, we have certain unique opportunities and unique challenges, and every school, I think, is the same in that way. And even though education is simply expensive, and people have to realize that, they're... I would say a big area of waste, in my opinion, is schools, and we all do it to some degree, but keeping people around who are, I guess I'll say, are doing less than an excellent job. I think too often, I mean, first of all, it's you know, whether you're talking about teachers, whether you're talking about support staff, whether you're talking about the back office, schools have to really be careful to ensure that they have the best possible people they can have. And if it isn't really good, move on, because I think sometimes we think we're being we're having a big heart, and we think we're being sensitive, and ultimately it's hurting everybody, most significantly children. So I think too many schools have too many people around who've whether it's just, you know, not necessarily pulling their weight. I've seen it in a lot of different schools, and have spoken to a lot of different people about this, and I think that's one big piece. And I think also is I guess on the collections and tuition end, I think some schools, and ours has been this way for a long time, we've gotten a lot better, have been leaving too much money on the table. I don't at all want to come across as insensitive. I know so many families are having such a tough time, but there are some who are, I think, not necessarily making the life choices and putting education as a real priority, and do have a significant amount more sometimes to put towards their children's education. And I think the scholarship committees and the collections departments have to be really, really sharp about that. And we also as a community can't let schools be pitted against one another and let people shop around for the best bargain. I think schools and within various communities have to work together on that. So I think those are two areas where there's some waste that could be cleaned up.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really, really, it's a really good point. So what's the long-term goal? I mean, could you get it to the point where you continue to keep tuition at the level it's at, or is it just going to snowball and then one day you're going to wake up and say, we have a 10% raise this year? You know, where do you see it going?
So we are specifically doing our best to make sure that does not happen. We are, as of now, right this year, every single month, money continues to go into our reserve, because our reserve was, you know, to a large degree depleted, and because of the payoff of the mortgage. And again, there was also a donor match, and there was also parents who gave, additional funds towards that. But we are month by month rebuilding up our reserve, and we have already allocated in this year's budget a chunk of money for a 2% teacher raise for next year already, because we want to make sure that we could still raise the teacher salaries next year again by our standard, which has been always at least 2%. And our goal is going to be to keep tuition stable again. We're not planning in the immediate future for another reduction. We're going to kind of see how that goes, but the outright stated goal is to keep tuition stable.
That's wonderful. That is really terrific. Now, what about the role of grandparents in this? Is there any policy in the school, or what do you think about it?
We do not have a policy in the school, and I think that's one of our biggest untapped resources. Traditionally, we have not done well in that regard. We do have some, you know, of course, wonderful grandparents who have been generous, but we really haven't made it much of a priority, honestly, and that's an area where we can improve. And we're working on it. We are working to communicate with more grandparents and send them more information and bring them down. You know, some grandparents live in the area, of course, some do not. And we're really working on that and creating. We have different, like, societies, and we do have, like, a grandparent society for giving. But nonetheless, I don't think we're doing the best that we can. One area that we really are trying to work on, and the grandparent population is a key point of this, is on our endowment campaign. We're a part of this Life and Legacy program. Many schools in South Florida are, and I know throughout the country are involved in this. And we've really been moving fast on that. We have already over 30 letters of intent for people to commit to our endowment campaign. This is, you know, post-life gift. By the end of the year, we've been incentivized. If you get, like, certain amounts, we get money from this foundation. By the end of the year, our goal is to have 53 letters of intent. meaning actual formalized gifts. And we know these are not gifts that are going to be realized for at least, you know, 20, 30 years plus. But we have to have a long-term perspective. We have to really say, you know, I mean, if our school founders 25, 30 years ago, if any school that's been around for 25, 30 plus years took endowments seriously back then, I don't think there'd be anywhere as close to tuition issues that we have nowadays, because schools would be collecting hundreds of thousands of dollars a year from these investments. And we need to think now about the future. And even though I'll be, you know, I'll probably won't be in this position and maybe won't be working as a principal at that time, but Jewish education is nothing more important, and this has to go on. And I think that's another big area where we're focusing now, and hopefully it'll be realized in the next couple of decades.
So two quick questions. One, were you surprised at the viral effect of the news when you put it out?
I was, to some degree, actually. I knew that the article being in the New Jersey Jewish Link would get some solid reading. I know it goes to a lot of homes in that area, and that was really what I was expecting. What I wasn't expecting was just how it like kind of flew around online and got reposted again and again on Facebook. And it was, you know, within a few days, it was read, I think, like 7,000 times. I was contacted by principals from all over the world and other, you know, friends or people that I've known and wanted to talk to me about it, or people expressing interest. So I actually was surprised, but I'm glad that this kind of stuff is getting attention. Of course, I appreciate the, you know, the positive PR for our school, of course. But on the global level, you know, I hope these are things that people are going to focus on, so that way our Jewish educational systems can continue to be, you know, not just good, but great for years and years to come.
Fantastic. Well, listen, I really appreciate it. And Rabbi Adam Englander, the head of school at the Cats Hillel Day School of Boca Raton, really, I think you've given hope to a lot of people. Once again, listen, every school is different. We know that, and what you're doing there may not necessarily be replicable in every school, but certainly you're at a big school, and the fact that you've been able to do this and do it successfully, have a long-term plan, I think is really, really wonderful. So, yasher koach to you and your board on what you've done, and we look forward to talking to you again. So thank you so much, okay?
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful
Bye-bye.
Day.
Bye. Bye-bye.